Support for the Source podcast comes from UT Health San Antonio, South Texas' largest academic research institution, where what is discovered in its labs translates into life-changing patient care. More at groundbreakingresearch.org.
Live from the John L. Santico studio, this is The Source from Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. The San Antonio-Austin corridor saw its population increase over the last decade by over 30%, and it's expected to be home to over 6 million people by 2030. The area is growing so fast, experts predict it could surpass the Dallas-Fort Worth metroplex in population by 2050. So if you think the drive up I-35 is bad now, unreliable, a constant traffic jam, well, just wait. It's going to get much, much worse and more dangerous. Well, what can be done? People have been talking about a commuter rail line between San Antonio and Austin for decades. It has a lot of public support, but it has been tried and it had failed. But could a new effort find success where others failed? We're joined now by San Antonio District 6 City Council member Melissa Cabello-Habra. She's also now head of the MPO, the Metropolitan Planning Organization. And welcome, council member, to The Source.
Thank you. Good afternoon.
So our phone line is 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. You can text us at that call-in line, 833-877-8255. Send us an email to thesource@tpr.org. So, Councilmember Cabello-Habra, where are we on this project, trying to create a rail line between San Antonio and Austin?
We are poised to really start to begin these conversations. I think, as you mentioned, there's been some history and there's a lot of somewhat negative energy about the history of rail in and around San Antonio. So even having the discussions is a difficult proposition. I was in, as you mentioned, I'm chair of our MPO. Last year, we had a joint Alamo area and Capital area MPO meeting, which so Austin and San Antonio. And I brought up rail then, and it was very quiet, not a lot of response. Afterwards, I was a flurry of emails and calls saying, hey, Councilwoman, we really want to talk about this. So I thought it was interesting that everybody wanted to talk about it under the radar, but not in this open meeting. Now, that was about a year ago. We had a joint meeting just last week and much more positive response. As a matter of fact, there was a presentation given from the Austin area MPO. And they mentioned that they've had a lot of discussions with community and they keep bringing up rail. So I think that's really what is pushing me forward in this, is it's coming from community. This isn't kind of a bunch of higher ups saying, let's get this done. It's community that's asking for it. I think we finally hit the pain point where community needs to see something happening that's more reliable and efficient between San Antonio and Austin.
So we had the Lone Star Rail project. It spent an estimated, what was it, $20 million for studies and research and consultants. There were efforts to work with Union Pacific to gain access to the rail line that they use for freight between San Antonio and Austin. And then it just became a point where UP was just never going to give up that rail line. It's too profitable for them. As trade with Mexico becomes bigger and bigger with the United States, it just can't give it up. I mean, come on. So that ended what the idea was for the Lone Star Rail. So what lessons do you learn from that failure?
So I'm glad you brought up Lone Star Rail. We cannot move forward with discussions without looking at what went wrong. I think it's a good case study on somewhat what to do, but mostly what not to do. I understand that both Alamo area and Capital area MPO were allocated millions of dollars. Austin area put in their $12 million right up front. There was a lot of studies done, and just the other day said that they sort of regretted it. Now, the San Antonio area MPO, we kept that money. We didn't give it to Lone Star Rail. But what I understand is it made a lot of consultants a lot of money, but we, as you know, we don't see any rail. There wasn't a lot of anything that came to fruition from it. So, and at this point, it's the elephant in the room. We need to talk about it. We need to learn about what went wrong there, and not trying to revive that plan. We know the issues with UP, and I have talked with UP, and they're wonderful people. And I've come to understand that yes, of course, they're a business, and they're making a profit, but they have current customers who need reliability. They need
and they have
timeliness.
Stockholders.
Right, of course, yeah. And so they don't want, I mean, they're a private business and they should be worried about their stakeholders. And so I think that the discussion, we continue to have discussions with UP, but we have to start looking in a different direction. So looking at what Lone Star Rail did right and did wrong is very important. And I think the worst part about it, though, is it left a lot of people in fear of talking about rail because of the failures of Lone Star Rail. So when I brought it up last week, there's a definite shift of energy, you know, in the room. But people are now talking about it. It's like we are all kind of hush-hush about rail, and now we're saying the R word out loud. We're having these discussions. And I'm hoping that we're overcoming some of that fear and hesitation that we have now because of Lone Star Rail.
So, I mean, what can you do right that they did wrong? Is there a way to do this without Union Pacific's rail?
I believe so. And I think, you know, trying to force their way through something that was never going to happen, that's a big waste of everybody's time and money. So looking at different right-of-ways, having conversations with private public partnerships. There's a very successful line in Florida called Brightline, and they've done a very successful public partnership. They opened up a rail between Orlando and Miami. That's the first privately funded intercity rail in over 100 years in our country. And they opened up September of 23. So not that long. We're going to watch and see how they do. But they were mostly funded by equity investment, debt financing, their own operational revenue. That was the private part of it. Public was tax-exempt bonds, state grants, and infrastructure improvements. So what I'm really interested in to see is how that's working. And what can we learn from them? And can that be translated over into Texas between San Antonio and Austin? As you mentioned, we are so fast growing. I grew up here and I lived on District 6 where I now represent. And just that area of town, the far west side of San Antonio, is not the same place it was just 10 years ago. So I think that when we're looking at rail between San Antonio and Austin, again, we are at that pain point. We have to figure out a way to get people there back and forth efficiently. But we're also opening up commerce. We're opening up culture. We're opening up more than just a literal rail, a literal, you know, roadway. It's a lot. It could be a lot more. And as you talk about a mega region, you know, think of Dallas-Fort Worth, right, and just up the road. I always say that Austin's like our primos up the road, right? But they really more our sister. I mean, we're very close, and so we have to continue to foster that.
Yeah, I call it the Metro Combo Loco.
That's the official name now.
Yeah, okay, so that, you know, it's happening. Mm-hmm. This growth is happening whether or not we are going to do it with intent and purpose and planning. The question is, if we do put some intent and planning into this, mm-hmm. then we can do it smart, in a smart way. And so the growth will be muscle and connective tissue rather than just kind of this messed up tumor kind of a growth. It's right. Just really going to sap away energy from the two large cities, but also getting the communities in between on board as
yes.
well is also part of the challenge.
Yes, I'm really grateful. I've had good conversations with Travis County Judge Andy Brown, with our own County Judge Sakai, but I've also had some conversations with some council members along the road. New Braunfels Councilman Andres Campos has been very involved, and so we can't leave them out, right? This is all part
right.
of the same.
So everyone will benefit. Everyone's got to get on board, and we got to have open conversations about what it is that we want and how we're going to get there. And our phone lines are open, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. Are you all on board for a San Antonio-Austin commuter rail? What do you think about these issues, problems, cost? Who should bear the cost? Give us a call. We want to hear from you. This is the chance to do a community workshop on what we want and how we're going to get there. This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. We'll be right back.
Support for TPR comes from La Fonda on Main, honoring the authentic cuisine of interior Mexico since 1932. Open for lunch, brunch, and dinner. More information at lafondaonmain.com.
You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. With me in the studio is San Antonio District 6 City Council member Melissa Cabello-Cavada. She is the new chair of the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, and we're talking about the need for a rail line between San Antonio and Austin, a commuter rail line that would be efficient, effective, and affordable for people to zip up and down between the two cities and the communities in between. And we get a comment, a question, give us a call, 833-877-8255. And we have Mari on the line. Mari, you're on the air.
Hi, David. How are you today?
All right.
Yeah, so I grew up on the East Coast. I've lived in Chicago. Public transportation is a given in both of those areas. And I think it's time that we move in this direction to get vehicles off the road. I mean, we've heard from the folks with the Texas Public Works organization who says that I-35 is going to be constructed on until the end of time. And that's not an efficient way of getting, obviously, pollution out of the communities. And I'd like to know where things are at also with the Houston-Dallas high-speed transportation program that they've been talking about for a long time, too.
All right, Mari, thank you so much for your call. We appreciate that. Melissa, do you have insight into what's happening between Dallas and Houston?
I don't know an update about them. I do know that they Biden gave $66 billion for expansion of Amtrak rail throughout the country, and I think that corridor got some money from that line item from Biden's budget. So, you know, I'm jealous, number one, right? I would like to see some of that money coming between San Antonio and Austin, but I don't know the plan for it. I don't know how any updates about how they're looking to spend it. Are they doing a public-private? But I'm very interested to see, because it's closer to us. I love talking about the Brightline in Florida because it's such a successful project so far, but we need to look at places closer to home because we are dealing with a different state entity and different municipalities.
Let's go to the caller. We have Chris, and Chris, you're on the air.
Hi, thank you for taking my call today. Some of the issues that I have with old school rail lines are the lack of integration in cities to get other places once you go point to point. Are there options for a hybrid type rail system that can virtually link multiple cars that are electric, that are somewhat like a bus, somewhat like a train, and that can peel off and act more like use road surface as well, so that we don't get tied into an old school system that's just point to point.
All right, Chris, thank you for that. And so, Melissa, that's kind of an avant-garde way of approach.
Yeah.
Is this something that's been, when y'all, it's too early to be talking like, where is the train going to go and what time is it going to get me there? We're way in early parts of this. And so now's a good time to be talking about really new ways of doing things, because the way that we're going to be getting around in the future is going to be very, in the near future, like in the next 5 years, is going to be very different than how we get around now. So what about ideas like we just heard from Chris?
I welcome those ideas. This is exactly the right time to be talking about ideas like that. You know, we are talking a lot about stronger, more sustainable cities throughout the country, especially here in San Antonio. And that includes maybe a world with less vehicles, less cars, less. I mean, we have to worry about, we're talking about our environment as well. But to hear this idea, which I have not heard before, a hybrid rail system where we incorporate electric cars is very exciting to me. And that's why I think this is just the right time for it. I think there's a lot of innovation, a lot of technology now that we can talk about that we couldn't talk about even 10 years ago. So I welcome the idea.
So how necessary do you see having a rail link between San Antonio and Austin?
I think that there was a time when our community or city talked about rail as if it was a luxury. And I do not believe it's a luxury anymore. I believe it's a necessity, an absolute necessity. The growth that we're experiencing today, and anybody that rides, you know, drives back and forth from Austin to San Antonio will understand that, you know, when I was a kid, it took 45 minutes to get to Austin. Now it's a couple of hours on a bad day. So looking at this is an absolute necessity. I think we really have to look at hybrid situations, different kind of innovative ideas, to make it not just good for us right now, but helpful and effective for us going forward, because we're not getting smaller. We're only getting bigger. As much as we love or we hate it, the secret's out. San Antonio is the place to be. And so people are coming from all over the country, and we have to be able to look forward. My favorite proverb is the best time to plant a tree was, you know, 20 years ago. The second best time is today. We have to start talking about it.
Another caller. We have Susie on the line. The number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. And Susie, you're on the air.
I'm 67 years old, and I've seen several tries at adding rail between San Antonio and Austin, and they failed. And the holdouts, the land holdouts, were blamed. I'm not sure if that's what the true problem was. So how would you deal with that this time? And then I have another question is, once you get into town, say the rail is built, how do you get across town? How do people get across town without vehicles? Because right now getting across vehicles isn't too easy in either city. Thanks.
All right. Thank you so much for that call, Susie. So land holdouts, and then we'll talk about once you get there, what do you do? So could there be like people saying, well, you're going to take some of my land, you're going to pay top dollar?
Yeah, and I mean, they have every right to, right? We're Texas, we're a property state. I feel really strongly about property rights as well. I think there's different circumstances than have been in the past. Number one, there's federal monies for that. So we can really look at not just what we as a state can provide or even municipalities, but looking at federal funding. The infrastructure bill can pay 80% of a rail project. Does that include land acquisition? I mean, we have to look at that. But even if it doesn't, that money can be displaced so we can use money for land acquisition. And then our region would need to come up with the remaining 20%, but that's a pretty big part of it. Talking about the last mile issue that she said, once you're in town, how do you get around? I happen to be a big proponent of VIA. I think that we're doing a lot of work, especially with the Advanced Rapid Transit, both the Silver and Green Line. So getting around San Antonio is going to be a little easier, especially with those ART lines. In Austin, I understand they have the DART.
Yeah, they get rail.
So they have their own internal rail, but it's all the same ways that we do it when we fly into a city too, right? Sometimes it's rideshare, sometimes it's people we know. So, I mean, I think that we have to look a little closer at better funding VIA, maybe better funding their DART, but that's the municipalities also have to take care of that.
But if you were to do this, there would probably be a station like downtown, mm-hmm. station
Absolutely.
At the airport, station yeah. then further up towards
right.
universities and things like that, where high destination areas, mm-hmm. People who go downtown would have access to a lot of the entertainment and amenities and hotels right. and convention centers. So, and we have the transportation hub here. Mm-hmm. So it's doable. It won't be as like the rail like you see in Austin for a lot of reasons. We can have a whole nother hour to talk about that. But, you know, I don't think that's a barrier. But we do need to be thinking about that as this moves along.
Agreed. Yeah. I mean, we have to talk about the last mile. And also, we're working very hard to make our city more walkable. So if we have a station that's right, you know, very close to downtown, we have the bike program that you can rent. We have our SA Go now. It's a little little go-kart. I think, you know, it's bigger than a go-kart, but you can get on those. There's a lot of different options.
Let's go to Aiden on the phones. And Aiden, thanks for calling in. You're on the air.
Hi.
Hey.
So, I remember very specifically that former Governor Perry even tried to propose a similar kind of connecting route. And, of course, his goal was to have multiple stops along the same route that the highway is in parallel. Would that still be, I guess, the goal, is to have multiple stops along the same route as the highway?
All right, Aiden, thank you so much. So if you were to – I mean, I don't understand why when I go up into I-35 and – you see that there's that strip of land right in between the two highways. You know, mm-hmm. our north and south. Why don't you just put rail right down the middle of the I-35 right there?
I think that's an option. We've even heard options of elevated rail over the highway. I think, though, it's come up a couple of times now this morning. It's very important that we're talking along about the stops along the way. We don't want to bypass those areas. I mean, sometimes it'd be lovely to go to dinner in New Braunfels and back, and it not it'd be open to us.
Well, these are very active, high growth communities, right, as well. Well, right. They also, you know, should be served, and the more the merrier.
That's right. And I keep talking about all the growth, and yes, there's a lot of growth here in San Antonio and in Austin, but I think right now Kyle is one of the biggest growing communities in the country. And we have to add New Braunfels, all of the stops along the way as well. All of those are experiencing this high growth, so they are places to stop. We want to be able to enjoy them. Maybe we're not always going back and forth to Austin and San Antonio. Maybe we're making these stops along the way, and that's actually our destination. So I think it's very important that we continue to
incorporate.
Yeah, there's
university in San Marcos and all sorts
of
things. That's right. Let's go to David on the line. David on the phone, you're on the air.
Hi. Coincidentally, just the other day, I pulled up a list of cities off the internet. Cities in the United States that have rail, and there are 33 cities listed here. Now, I've been in San Antonio 46 years. I'm originally from New York, and I worked in New York City but lived about 30 miles outside New York City, took the train in every morning and took it back every night, stopped in Grand Central in New York, and then the station that I lived at, called Harrison, New York. But there are 33 cities on this list of cities in the United States that have rail. And San Antonio is the largest city in the United States without rail. And it's about time, I really believe. And it's not just one line that's should go downtown. It could be three lines. One goes south of Texas. One goes up to Austin. One goes north. Northeast. San Antonio needs rail.
Right. Well, David, thank you so much for the call. There are a lot of political obstacles. There's a charter amendment that prohibits the breaking of city streets to put in rail. There are a lot of people who are entrenched in local politics who are opposed to that. They've made their bones being opposed to that. So it's that is something to shoot for. Right now we're talking about a rail issue between San Antonio and Austin, and we will continue to have discussions about inner city rail, but this intra-city rail between the two cities, that seems to be the ticket for right now, right?
Yes. Yeah, that's a conversation. But he does bring up a good point. I mean, we're talking about Austin, San Antonio, all the stops along the way. And we talk about how it can open up commerce. But he talks about job opportunities. We can open up the space for more job opportunity, for education, right, to different schools along the way. So I think I agree with him. I think the time is now, maybe long past due, to really have discussions about this and see it happen, but it can open up so much more than just an efficient way back and forth to Austin.
Some people are talking about rail going all the way down to Monterey.
Absolutely. So the original idea, I understand, is Oklahoma City through Dallas, San Antonio, Laredo, down to Monterey. Yeah.
And there would be a lot to gain by linking all these. And that is part of the dream, is that this would be affordable.
Yes. Absolutely. That's a necessity. And this has to be open to as many people as possible. When we talk about access to education, access to job opportunities, we have to make it accessible to those with a lower income.
All right. So we're going to continue our discussion talking about a San Antonio to Austin rail plan. It is being revived again. There was a drive earlier, but this fell short, way short. There are so many obstacles. But can those obstacles be turned into solutions? What do you think needs to be done What's your vision? Give us a call, 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We're going to continue our discussion with District 6 City Councilmember Melissa Cabello-Habida for another 15 minutes. Then she's got to go. So get your call in now, 833-877-8255. Source continues right after this.
The EarthX 2024 Environmental and Sustainability Congress of Conferences is happening in Dallas, April 22nd through the 26th, bringing together all sides with one important mission: protect our planet. For info, earthx.org.
This is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies, having a very vibrant conversation about rail between San Antonio and Austin and what would it take to get a new plan in motion. We're speaking with District 6 City Council Member Melissa Cabello-Habida, and she is the new chair of the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization, and she says it's time to get real about rail. So give us a call. What's your take? 833-877-8255, 833-TPR-TALK. We have an email from Carrie, and Carrie says, I would rather have rail, traditional rail, than Elon Musk underground system. He thinks that the rail would be invasive for the ecosystem. There's some questions about whether it would damage the aquifer or not. So Elon Musk has the Boring Company, which is a giant underground tunnel digging machine that they built something in Las Vegas. He's building something now at his Gigafactory in Austin, a little tunnel. And they got the boring machines working right now over there. And there's been a proposal. There seemed to be some interest from the Boring Company to take the lead in building a San Antonio to Austin underground corridor. It is innovative. It is new. It's dynamic. It's bold. And it sounds so out there that some people can't wrap their heads around it. But where are you on this?
I'm open to it. I'm looking at moving people back and forth efficiently. I would like it to have stops along the way. When I was chair of our transportation committee with the city, I invited the Boring Company to come and speak with us because they were talking about a tunnel between the airport and downtown. And they declined to do that. We had the county come and speak with us, but I think we should keep the lines of communication open. I would love to hear from them. I'd love to understand what they need from us, especially if if the Boring Company wants to fund it. Obviously, you know, that's something that's always difficult, especially when we talk about public dollars. So I'd be open to it. I think that there are different options, and this is one of them that I would love to hear about.
So one of the advantages, apparently, of the Boring Company is that they wouldn't have to pay so much for the right-of-way because mm-hmm. it's subterranean. There might be some issues they can do more to, if they're able to use some of the same laws and procedures in place, if you're building a pipeline, there's a lot of Texas law that favors, you know, the builder of pipelines mm-hmm. in Texas. Mm-hmm. And so it would be very difficult for property owners to tell them no. And they say they could do it cheaper and faster than if it was going to be surface level rail. So those are other advantages that people don't really seem to be aware of.
Absolutely. But you did bring up a good point. My main concern about that would be the aquifer, right? Making sure that we're not invading on our water source. And
right.
That's super important.
And corrupting, but again, polluting,
right.
Disrupting.
Right. And then the animal
sure.
life too there. But it would be, I mean, in some ways less invasive, right? If you look at our beautiful Texas countryside, you wouldn't see a big, you know, train going through it, maybe.
Yeah.
It'd be nice for it to be underground, but I do have a real concern about the aquifer.
Well, I think that's what will have to be established. We have another caller, and is it Susie again? Susie.
Yeah, hi. My suggestion is like a train ferry. I know on the East Coast they have trains that go, you drive your car, you get in Baltimore, you go down to Florida in some, you know, little town, you get off the train, you get your car, and off you go. And I just think that would be like a baby step towards rail, because that way you could you know, go anywhere, or, you know, wherever you stop. You're not going to be in a congested area. You got your car. You don't have to worry about the secondary transportation. That's my suggestion. Thank you.
All right. Another suggestion, something to keep in mind. But first, we got to get the rail. We got to get the train. How much do you think this would cost?
So there have been a lot of projections, right? I think $35 billion or so to get started. And there's some bad examples. There's an example in California, I think, because their land is so expensive that they've gone up way past their budget. But I do want to say that the cost is obviously very important, and who pays for that is very important. But right now in Austin, there's 8 miles that are being worked on by the state, and in San Antonio, there's 20 miles that are being worked on. The cost at per mile for these two projects is $282 million per mile. We're talking about high-speed rail in between here and Austin. That would be much less. You know, it's the actual cost for rail would be less than it would be for the roadway that we're already building.
Right, it's cheaper than building another lane of highway.
Yeah, I'm sorry, you said it much better. But so it's approximately $25 billion in construction of these 28. Lanes overall, and I said, you know, $282 million a mile. But the stretch of road between San Antonio and Austin, that would be the $35 billion. So we're looking at like a $10 billion difference. Now, that's no small amount, but I think a lot of it is when you say, well, it's too expensive, we can't afford it. We're already doing, for 28 miles, we're spending $25 billion. So it's a matter, as you mentioned earlier, of political will, of community will. So we really have to factor that into the cost.
So TxDOT, the Texas Department of Transportation, has a clear, and I think they would even admit it, a bias towards road traffic. Mm-hmm. They're not interested in supporting rail traffic. Mm-hmm. They see their mission, even though their name is transportation, they see the Texas Department of Roads. Is there anything that can be done about that?
About
getting them to understand that, you know, let's think a little more broadly.
I think so. I mean, I think they're open to it. I think the big issue is that when we talk about rail, a lot of people think that we're talking exclusively rail. I'm not going to say this is going to replace the roadway. We as Texans love our cars. It's just another option, right? So, but absolutely, I think when I talked about it at our joint meeting, there was some pushback about the funding that we need for roads. And I understand that. It's about looking at different options and looking into the future. And I will say I've had really good conversations with people with the state as well, and they're not saying no, right? I mean, I think there were times when they said absolutely not. So I think everybody's open to the conversation now. We just all are very much pointed and looking at the future. And so in that regard, we have something in common.
You know, people don't think about it, but roads are mass transit too.
Yeah, absolutely.
It's just that you get to go buy a car to take advantage of it.
Right.
What we want is mass transit that's available to everyone. Let's go to Bonnie on the phones. Hey, Bonnie, are you there?
Hi.
Yeah, you're
yes,
on the
I'm
air.
Here.
Hey.
Okay, thank you. I was kind of wondering, I seem to remember Southwest Airlines kind of lobbied against this back in the day. And I'm wondering if they've, since they've grown so much, if they'll keep out of it this time.
Hmm. All right. Bonnie, thank you for the call. Yeah, so there was, you know, that story about how there was a plan for more robust rail connections all across Texas, and this was in the early days of Southwest Airlines, and when they were mainly focused on moving people around Texas, and there may have been some creative lobbying going on, but those days are now past.
I hope so. I mean, you know, I think they're big enough now, right? They're not so much worried about being replaced by rail or us choosing rail over a flight. But we also have to kind of remember the places that we fly, not just on Southwest, but in the places that we drive to. As San Antonians, we're pretty apt to just sort of drive to Laredo, right? We're not going to fly, right? Even to the Valley, it's not a bad drive to the Valley anymore. The Laredo, and I think you may have mentioned this earlier, but the trip to Laredo, when we went a few weeks ago, I learned that Laredo right now is the largest port in the country. by far. And they're preparing for nearshoring through Mexico, increased traffic across the border into the U.S., or widening the lanes of the international bridge. And there's going to be more trucks competing for more space with passenger cars. So when we're talking, I know today about San Antonio to Austin, but we have to keep thinking about that whole big stretch from Oklahoma City down to Monterrey. The Interstate 35 is the freeway, the freeway tying, us all together. So as a consequence, it's frequently overloaded, not just with passenger cars, but with trucks. They showed us this graphic of freight coming through the Laredo port. And in a couple of days, I mean, in 48 hours, it was like this blood in veins, you know, it was all over Texas and beyond. So it's all over the state. It's not just on 35. It's affecting us all.
So what's the forecast? How is this going to work? What are the next steps that you have to take?
The next step is talking a little more seriously with TxDOT and seeing where they'll be on this, seeing how if at all we can involve Union Pacific, and just making sure if those doors are closed, how are we going to get around them? I don't think they are, but you know, we have to make sure that we remove as many obstacles as possible. I understand the history, the challenges, the obstacles. I also know that we can't afford to talk about our common future without talking about alternative ways to move passengers between our cities. So initially, yes, this is having conversations to figure out the path forward. Is it a public-private partnership? Is it the hybrid situation? Is it a train ferry? How does it look? Where are we stopping? But right now, we have to plant that seed. Today is the day we're planting the seed for that tree that will bear fruit for us all in the future. You know, it's about putting rail on the table, bringing the folks to the table that need to be there, especially the public, and getting serious about our future. It's a long-term goal, but it's one we can no longer afford to deny.
And you say your phone is open for Elon Musk. He wants to call you and talk about this plan. You know that you want to hear it.
Absolutely.
And you're open to new ideas.
Yes.
And because it's going to take creative solutions, because obviously the old way of trying to do this didn't work.
Right. So the conversation's not comfortable. I mean, you know, we have to get creative. We talk, we have to be innovative in this. And I also open my line to any member of the public that wants to talk to me. You can live in the city, you can live in Austin. I want to hear from the public. There's plenty of great ideas out there.
All right, Melissa Cabello-Javera is the San Antonio District 6 City Council member and the new chair of the Alamo Area Metropolitan Planning Organization. Thank you so much for joining us.
Thank you.
Sorry
so
to see you go. You have other things to do, and I got to let you go.
I enjoyed it.
When we come back from the break, we're going to be hearing from our Texas Public Radio reporter about the San Antonio Police SWAT team going to Dubai for a competition and why that is controversial. Stay with us. You're listening to The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Last month, the San Antonio Police SWAT team went to a challenge to another country in Dubai. And they have been criticized again from human rights organizations and people who are calling for police reform for going to that competition. We're now joined by Texas Public Radio's police reporter, Josh Peck, to tell us more. And Josh, welcome to The Source.
Thanks for having me.
So, what's the criticism that people have about this SWAT team going to Dubai?
So the criticism is pretty simple. The UAE SWAT Challenge is held in Dubai every year by the Dubai Police, and they invite police departments from all over the country, special units, and many of these units are known for human rights violations. You have units from China, from the Philippine National Police, known for extrajudicial killings of for drug crimes, alleged drug crimes, and SAPD participated alongside these other units.
So the fact that they've participated alongside these other units who have documented cases of human rights violations, is the call that by competing along with them that they're somehow fine with their human rights abuses?
Well, SAPD says that, you know, this event is like the Olympics. You know, countries come together despite geopolitics and they compete. But one of the human rights experts I spoke to said that that's not really, that argument doesn't really work here, because the difference is that this competition emphasizes the exchange of tactics and exchange of skills. That's kind of one of the big goals of this competition. And so when you have that and you have these units, the known for the human rights abuses, you know, people raise questions, well, are these tactics coming back to San Antonio?
So, like, it's comparing as if there was an Olympic event for waterboarding.
Right. Yes.
So, okay, who's the best waterboarder? That's would be in a tactical kind, in a tacit kind of way to basically saying we're fine with competing alongside people who will don't follow the same concerns about human rights and protecting people's liberties. But who does? I mean, what other country? I mean, would we be competing with if we did that? I mean, there may be a few, but not many, I would imagine.
Countries that kind of recognize our own.
You know, the points that we would be like on the same sort of level with. I mean.
Well, yeah, you know, one of the things about this competition is that there are very few police units from Western European democracies, for example. And so you don't have their participation, which is another reason that the Olympics comparison doesn't really work here, according to this human rights expert, because this was not a universal competition. It was a lot of police units from authoritarian countries.
So there are enlightened countries that say, we're not going. We see this. We have a problem with this.
Well, nothing's been said publicly, and the Dubai police send out invitations. So it's not clear exactly who was invited and who chose not to attend. But it is clear that a lot of Western democracies did not attend. The SAPD and the NYPD from New York were the only two American units to go.
So what about the whole oddity issue that they have these competitions for SWAT teams? First of all, are these SAPD members, are they on the clock when they go to do these competitions? Is this part of their job?
It appears that it is. When I asked SAPD whether or not these officers took paid leave, they wouldn't say. They asked that I make a records request, which I've done. I'm still waiting to hear back on that. But it appears that they were on the clock and that for other competitions, they are as well.
Our phone number is 833-TPR-TALK, 833-877-8255. If you've got a question or a comment about SAPD's SWAT team going to Dubai, going on these competitions, we want to hold a standard of human rights abuses and we won't compete in these types of competitions. So what does this competition look like?
So the competition, it's in Dubai, and it's held for, it's 5 days of competition. It was February 1st through the 5th this year. There's also about a week of practice beforehand. And these are five different days of different courses. You know, you have obstacle courses, you have shooting, each team has their own sniper. So there are all these different obstacles and courses they run through. Some of them are, officer rescue, where one cop will carry another through part of the course. There's zip lines. There are, towers that they have to climb. You know,
it sounds very cinematic.
You know, it is. And, you know, the Dubai police, they live stream this event. They talk about this promotion to the media. I think you've had some other organizations in San Antonio cover that from using these videos where it does look very cinematic. You have these officers in their gear and SAPD with many of their bandanas on, running through these courses, shooting targets, you know, moving as quickly as possible to get the best time without any errors.
When the SAPD SWAT team is in Dubai and other places for these competitions, who's minding the store?
Well, you know, the SAPD SWAT team unit that went was, I think it was six members. So, you know, the SWAT team here is larger than that. But, you know, obviously if they're in Dubai, they're not here. And so they can't be policing the streets of San Antonio.
So they have a backup team. They have a JV SWAT team members that they call on where the varsity is, you know, running the obstacle course in Dubai.
That's not clear, but you know, I have to imagine that SAPD had some type of contingency plan in case a SWAT team was needed at some point.
And how many of these competitions a year do they go on?
Well, so this UAE SWAT Challenge, this is annual. This is the first time SAPD has attended. But I've been told that there are other competitions, you know, domestically that members from the SWAT team and SAPD more generally attend that are kind of, you know, in the spirit of competition of tactical, competing against other units.
Other police departments, they're not so much police departments as part of the military. Is that an issue?
Yeah, you know, that's one of the things that human rights experts talked to me about was that there's a real concern for military tactics coming back to the United States because you have many of these countries where their police units are not independent from the militaries. In the case of the Dubai police, they are directly overseen by by the United Arab Emirates Ministry of the Interior. That's a federal department. And so you don't have the same kind of independence that you see with local law enforcement here. And so, yes, that is a big concern.
And so This has, what has the police department told you when you brought up these concerns about that if SAPD wanted to stand up and hold human rights up as a value for the SAPD, that they shouldn't compete? People are criticizing them for competing here. What do they tell you?
Well, the response was pretty short. And, you know, I made repeated attempts to ask a more detailed list of questions. But what they told me was that they were invited to compete in the spirit of competition and that the games, the competition was like the Olympics. And really, that's all they were willing to say. So when it comes to where I was on vacation, do they feel that this is appropriate use of time and it's appropriate for SAPD to be competing with these other units? They wouldn't say.
Well, you spoke to Act4SA, which is a local police reform organization. What did they say about all this?
Yeah, Nanda Thomas, the executive director, she had a lot to say. You know, she pointed out that these kind of competitions are places where police units can get militarized, become more like the military. You've seen this in the United States the past several decades. You know, more and more high-powered weapons and these armored vehicles that make them look more and more like the military, oftentimes from the military. And that, you know, this kind of competition with police units, you know, for example, one accused of war crimes in Ukraine, that, you know, it leads to more of this and more violence.
And she also points out about what the use of force that we have in San Antonio, that she sees it as a problem.
Right. Yeah. In 2023, she pointed out that there were 22 shootings and 14 killings from those shootings by SAPD. And that number of killings, 14, that's almost triple from the year prior.
So I guess the issue would be that you get invited to a competition doesn't mean you have to go to that competition. They probably get invited to a lot of competitions. What is the criteria for what they go to and what they say, no, this we don't want to go to this one?
Again, you know, I asked a list of questions to SAPD, and they weren't really willing to answer many of them. And so they didn't answer specifics about why they chose to attend this particular one, just that they did. And so, yeah, I think the real questions about what's the bar for SAPD.
And so did the United Arab Emirate, did they pay for this?
The Dubai police paid for SAPD's travel expenses. And like I said before, the Dubai police is directly overseen by the UAE's Federal Ministry of the Interior. So, you know, this is money coming from a state, from a federal government that the United States has assessed has committed human rights violations, paying for SAPD to travel to Dubai.
Well, are there any kind of policies in place for this type of activity? You know, did they violate anything any directives?
That's not clear whether or not there's some rule or law that they violated, but the human rights expert I spoke to said that, you know, he was really concerned that they accepted money from a foreign government in this way with its, you know, the human rights abuses that it has, and that, you know, SAPD and NYPD, you know, really should not have participated, and they really need to refuse to participate going forward.
Do they have any competitions for violence de-escalation, for dealing with people who are having a mental breakdown and how to resolve these things peacefully without pulling out your sidearm and going to town?
Not that I know of, but I imagine those probably wouldn't play as well on TV.
Right. Not quite as cinematic, but maybe that might be where some efforts could be put in. I'd like to see us get a first place for that. How did the SAPD team do when it traveled to Dubai?
So there were over 100 police units that participated from over 70 countries. Several countries sent two or three. And SAPD placed 11th, which was better than NYPD, but was not good enough to come home with any prize money. The top two units were from the Dubai police, their A and B team. And the top team came home with $80,000. I guess they kind of paid themselves $80,000.
So the prize money, would that go to the general fund of the city of San Antonio, or would that be going towards the guys who competed?
See, that's something that's not clear. And, you know, in the case of San Antonio, it didn't become relevant because they didn't win any money. But my understanding is that in previous years when NYPD has participated, it's been understood that the money would be split among the competitors.
Any indication that they'll be thinking a little bit harder next time before they get an invitation to go compete in Dubai?
No indication yet, but I'm happy to hear from SAPD whenever they want to reach out.
All right, Josh Peck is the Texas Public Radio City Hall reporter reporting on this interesting issue. Thanks for coming in and telling us about it.
Thanks for having me.
And this is The Source on Texas Public Radio. I'm David Martin Davies. Thanks for listening.
This has been The Source on Texas Public Radio. The Source is hosted and produced by David Martin Davies. Kayla Padilla is our booking and engagement producer. Engineering support from Ruben Garcia, Jesse Reeves, and Steve Short. Dan Katz is TPR's Vice President of News. The Source is made possible with support from the Gladys and Ralph Lazarus Foundation.